Indian coal energy giant Adani is facing an uphill battle to refinance its existing Abbot Point coal terminal and also to finance its proposed Carmichael coal mine. The refinancing of its port facility comes as the company must also find billions in loans for its Carmichael coal mine, which every Australian bank and many international banks have said that they will not support. To find out more, I'm speaking to Tim Buckley, Director of Energy Finance Studies at the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, Australasia. Welcome, Tim.
G'day there, Des.
Well, trouble with financing coal mines and their associated activities seems to be a worldwide problem. Can you paint a picture of a world view of how financing of these facilities is going?
Certainly. I might maybe risk four different examples to illustrate how fast the world's energy markets are changing, and the implications of that are enormous for Adani. So firstly, last week in Saudi Arabia, we saw a solar auction for a $300 million project go through at a record low $18 per megawatt hour. So $18 a megawatt hour for solar electricity to be generated for the next 25 years, and that is a world record low solar price. It's down 25% in the space of 1 year. So one of the key themes that I run is that energy markets are transforming because of inevitable technology change. And to me, that solar project in Saudi Arabia is the perfect example of how rapidly electricity prices are coming down domestically and internationally. And so a 25% decline to a new record low, $18. In India last week, we saw the same sort of event. India launched a tender for 1,000 megawatts of wind, and they were overwhelmed with responses, and the price of that wind contract was signed at $38 US per megawatt hour. That was down 25% on the previous record low. That means solar and wind in India are now both 20% below the cost of existing thermal power generation.
So those sorts of changes are boding very well for anybody who's after financing for coal and anyone who's making a decision about financing coal.
Exactly. I mean, that's the exact point, that if you can build wind and solar projects in India at 20% below an existing domestic coal-fired power plant, who would provide financing for an expensive import coal-fired power plant in India that would be 50% or 100% more expensive than a new wind or solar project in India? And yet India is where Adani has said all of their coal, or the majority of their coal, is to go. So it is not commercially viable to import that coal into India. And the Indian government is fully aware of it. They're the ones that actually held the billion-dollar auction of wind last week and got that absolutely staggering result. And turning to your question about financing, we saw this week BNP Paribas of France, the biggest bank in France, has just further expanded their climate risk financing initiatives. And so the headline was that they are accelerating their support of the inevitable energy transition, banning involvement in tar sands-related financing. They've banned coal-fired power generation financing, coal mine financing, and they've upped their commitment to investing in renewable energy to 15 billion euros by 2020. So that was BNP Paribas overnight. So some of the biggest global institutions, whether it's Swiss Re of Germany, Scores, the biggest insurer in France, whether it's Deutsche Bank, the biggest bank in Germany, or Westpac in Australia, they're all saying they do not want to be involved in financing thermal coal mines, nor the associated infrastructure relating to those thermal coal mines.
How is Adani going on track as far as gaining financial assistance, for instance, in the first case, from traditional financial markets?
Yeah, all along Adani has been talking up this project, talking about all of the massive supposed opportunities it creates. and how committed they are to the project. But it's worth bearing in mind, they bought this project, an existing project proposal, 7 years ago. 7 years later, they are still no closer to financial close than they were 7 years ago. And if anything, as I've just mentioned, the global markets for finance are moving rapidly. The underlying technology and energy markets are moving massively, very rapidly, in a way that's very adverse to this project. So you've got two massive headwinds to a project, and they're 7 years into the project and still 7 years behind schedule. So they are clearly finding finance to be a major obstacle. But nevertheless, what unfortunately they have been doing is using their political clout to get the Queensland government and the federal government of Australia to provide ever larger subsidies to the project in the form of very low cost subsidised finance for the project. So effectively, the Australian taxpayer, the Queensland taxpayer, is extending probably $1.5 billion of collective subsidised finance for this project. And it's that underwriting by the Australian taxpayer which is potentially how Adani hopes to get to financial close next year.
Now, in terms of state and federal support for this adventure of Adani's, what sort of reputation does it have in the eyes of other governments around the world?
Well, Adani is a very, very powerful company in India. There's absolutely no doubt about it. They're a very successful company in India. They are very well politically connected in India. And I think that is the core of how they're managing to convince the Australian government to give them a $1.5 billion subsidy here, given they've never paid a cent of tax, as far as I can calculate, in Australia. On average, their net tax bill from their port, they've got a $2 billion port in Queensland, it's paid net zero tax in the last 5 years. So it's not like they're a good corporate citizen paying tax and justifying their way, but they're very well politically connected, and that's ultimately the key issue. But what an analysis in India shows is that they've also used a lot of financial leverage everywhere they go, and I think that's one of their biggest problems.
So if we go on to what it's going to do in Australia, it seems as though the private financial markets dried up in terms of mostly from all Australian banks, and a hell of a lot of international banks have pulled out of any support for Carmichael and the coal terminal. Have governments been the last resort?
That's exactly what's happening. So to the extent that all of the private financial institutions across Australia have ruled out the project and distanced themselves from it, the Australian government, the Queensland government, keeps stepping up. Now, that's still not sufficient to get them there. So last week we saw the Australian CEO of Adani mention that they're looking to bring in even more export credit agency finance, which is another word for saying more government subsidised finance. So whether it's the Australian government or the Korean or Japanese or Chinese governments, they're in negotiations with an unnamed party to get even more public financing. I mean, the whole project is predicated on outsourcing the risk to taxpayers. It's not commercially viable, we know that. We know India doesn't want the coal. We know that coal plant that Adani proposes to sell the coal to is for sale for literally 1 rupee or 2 cents. So all through the chain, there's massive financial leverage, there are massive losses, and there's a reliance on ever greater taxpayer subsidies to get this project up and running. I can think of a million different projects that are better for the Australian government to spend taxpayer dollars on than this one.
Okay, speaking of Australian governments and taxpayer dollars, we've got what's called the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility, or NAIF. Could you explain what NAIF is, its makeup, and how it operates?
Yeah, it's an unusual vehicle, would be putting it politely. Wayne Swan from the Federal Opposition has called it a Liberal Party slush fund. I would probably extend that and say it's a Liberal National Party federal slush fund. It's got $5 billion of capacity to lend to projects. They announced the first project this week. It's a $20 million, $18 million loan to a fossil fuel company in Western Australia. They're proposing a $1 billion loan to Adani, and it's going to be massively subsidised. It's a 28-year term loan. It's at 3% per annum. It's extremely high risk. The chance of it being repaid is minimal, And so my definition of a subsidy is when it's very cheap finance, very long dated, and the chance of it being repaid is minimal, that's a subsidy. It's not a loan, it's not a commercial transaction. There's a taxpayer-driven rort for a foreign tax haven-based billionaire. So I find the NAIF fund, I think Wayne Swan's assessment of the NAIF fund is absolutely correct. It's a slush fund, and the transparency, the openness is minimal, to put it politely.
The port terminal that Adani runs is due for refinancing. The Adani owes Westpac some money, and also Adani wants to get the Carmichael mine rolling. Could the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility realistically fund both those? Because they're basically linked. There's no way that you could do one without the other.
Yeah, that the government hasn't as yet stooped that far into the trough of subsidies to say that they're going to extend the subsidy beyond the $1 billion from NAIF for the proposed railway line. NAIF's mandate does not involve refinancing existing projects. It's all about financing new proposals. So it's probably outside the mandate, but your question is spot on in that the Adani Group has a port in Queensland. They bought it for $2 billion 7 years ago from the Queensland government, or they leased it for 99 years to be precise. They paid $2 billion for it. The port now has $2.04 billion of debt against it. It's got negative shareholders' funds to the tune of $228 million. In 5 years, they haven't paid a cent of tax. That's what their accounts, their average tax expense in the last 5 years is zero. And ultimately, that comes down to the port is heavily, heavily geared. But as you mentioned, the big critical issue is that they have a $1.5 billion debt refinance coming up next year. The three arrangers of the debt 4 years ago were Deutsche Bank, Westpac and Combank. Now, at the start of this year, Deutsche Bank put out a new policy, and their policy is black and white. We do not finance thermal coal, nor do we finance thermal coal power stations. So that's a black and white policy. This port is a thermal coal port, and I think the chance of Deutsche being involved in the refinance this time around is pretty well zero. Westpac this week was grilled in Senate estimate hearings, and they categorically ruled out funding the refinancing of the port. Combank put out a very wishy-washy climate statement a couple of months ago. The chance of them being involved is remote. So all three major financiers last time have new policies from this year that pretty well preclude them being involved. So it then begs the question, who is going to refinance this massive port that's got 100% debt financing? And Adani can't get to financial close on the coal mine unless they refinance the coal port. So to me, it's a massive financial gamble, and who knows how it's going to plan out. But will NAIF be involved in the port refinance? I doubt it.
They are structured with a board of some sort, aren't they? Who makes up that board?
They've supposedly got an independent board of five directors, I think it is, but all five of those directors are appointed by the Liberal National Party. I think Matt Canavan's admitted he's the senator in charge, supposedly. If he actually is a senator, the court needs to rule on whether he's actually duly elected as a senator, given he's an Italian citizen. But putting that issue aside, so he's the senator in charge of NAIF, or his boss is Barnaby Joyce, is standing in at the moment, but Barnaby Joyce is a Kiwi, so he also is not actually duly elected as an Australian senator or member of parliament. The actual board of the NAIF is a very interesting board, would be how I would put it. Their transparency is very low, but we know who the members are. We know how they were elected. They were selected by government, and Senator Canavan admits he's put his friends in there. So it's stacked with mining representatives. It's meant to be the North Australia Infrastructure Fund, but you only have to look at it. There is no northern-based academic on board. There is no agriculturalist on board. There's no tourism industry on board. There's no agriculture, farming, health. There are plenty of different education. There's no representation of North Australian industry other than mining. And to me, that's a serious issue. That's why Wayne Swan's description of NAIF as a slush fund, it's a mining, or I'd go one step further, it's a fossil fuel mining slush fund.
So what would be the outcome if the NAIF funding doesn't come through and Adani has to walk away?
Well, that's a very good question. I would put a very high probability that if NAIF does not stand by the $1 billion loan that they've offered. And by the way, they haven't finished due diligence, so the loan offer is not formal. It is not binding. It can't be legally binding until Adani gets to financial close on this project. So they can walk away. They can do due diligence. They can highlight that this is a tax haven controlled vehicle. It's a tax haven controlled vehicle that has a sole director in Singapore who's under multiple corruption inquiries by the Indian government. So you'd have to say, is that a party that the Australian government wants to lend $1 billion of taxpayer money to? But so there are all sorts of reasons why the NAIF should not be giving $1 billion subsidy of Australian taxpayer money to a non-tax-paying foreign billionaire. If NAIF were to do the right thing, in my view, and walk away from this loan as just being outside of the credible options for investment, Adani is very much hamstrung. They've spent $1.5 billion buying a project proposal. The project proposal is not needed by India. It's not bankable. It's not financially viable. Any big multinational would normally make an assessment, walk away from the project and write it off. Now, BHP would do that. Rio would do it. Adani is a major global investor. They make some investments. They get the upside if they come off. They also weather downside if they don't come off. And this is one which hasn't come off, so they'd have to walk away with a material write-off. But that is life when you gamble. It's particularly difficult when you gamble using 100% debt financing, but that's Gautam Adani's choice. He is a very, very wealthy billionaire. He's got plenty of assets. He makes decisions. He needs to live or die by them.